Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed, I really felt that I was blessed. Plus I loved my uniform, so did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age, and all those things I thought were true, someday I'd break the big taboo.
Welcome to Digital Freethought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, or Larry Rhodes. Welcome to the show. I'm trying to get my volume levels here good. On the line, we have, as usual, we have Wombat. Can you say hi, Wombat?
What's up on the Wombat?
Okay, that sounds pretty good, I guess. The lights are going up and down, so it must be good. Anyway, Digital Freethought Radio Hour is a free thought or atheist call-in radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. We are on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LP FM, and we're live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is June 6th. I think that's D-Day, isn't it? And it's the anniversary of me going in the Navy, so it's kind of a double whammy. Anyway, so if you're not listening to it on June 6th or at 7 o'clock, you're probably listening to a podcast or rebroadcast, so don't worry about it. But if you are listening today, you can call in, join the conversation, talk to a real live atheist and a real live scientist. Wombat's a scientist. You can call in 865-333-5937. That's Knoxville 333-5937. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheists and free-thinking rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and I'll be telling about how you can connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, you are not alone. Also, did you know that there was an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for about 8 years now? Did you know that, Wombat?
I have, but I'm kind of hesitant about it because, you know, I love the first Lego movie. I don't know if I need a second Lego movie, and I'm not sure if it's just because the trailer was.
I don't think it has anything to do with Legos. Legos aren't real.
I'm sure it'll be good. Just saying, I'm a little hesitant.
Yeah, no, this is an atheist TV call-in show. Been going on for 8 years, and matter of fact, it's going on right now. If you want to switch your TV over to, what is that? Comcast Channel 12. It started at 6:30. It'll be over at 7:30, and they're on every week, just like we are. But don't change your radio dial. Keep it right where it is. And in spite
of both shows at once.
Do what?
Watch both shows at once.
Oh yeah, if you can do
double
that,
the rating.
Yeah, assign each kid one show and have them take notes.
There you go.
And in spite of what Steve Martin would have you think, there are an awful lot of atheist songs out there, and you'll be hearing some of them right here in this program and generally on the station, as they are in our station's rotation. What is our topic tonight, then, Wombat?
Topic tonight is a two-hit combo, testability and falsifiability. Two really important things to have a reasonable argument. I think the topic brought up was, or something that's really interesting, is that there's a guy called Matt Dillahunty. He runs, or he participates in a atheist call-in show very similar to this one called The Atheist Experience.
Right.
Very popular, broadcast out of Austin, Texas. And he's gone around the world to actually engaging a lot of people in, you know, formal debates and then more like conversational dialogues. Uh-huh. He's well known for having very good rhetoric with regard to really reasonable arguments.
Right. He's a very logical fellow.
Very, very logical, almost strictly straightforward in his approach. And
he's merciless almost a Vulcan.
Issues with people. Yeah, he's most very well out. Yeah. But he's writing a book. Mm-hmm. He's writing a book called If I Were God. And in it, he makes a really interesting, he was just on the show last week, but he makes what is deemed a controversial statement of his position as an atheist. He says, well, you know, as an atheist, some people believe that there's, they're unconvinced that there's a God. And some atheists are convinced that there are no gods whatsoever. And he says that the people who are convinced that there's no gods whatsoever actually have a better argument than the people who claim that there is a God, by virtue of the fact that the people who claim that there are no gods whatsoever have made a falsifiable claim. That means that they know what it would look like if they're wrong, which would just be the presentation of a God. Once they have that, mm-hmm. it shows that their argument's wrong. So in that case, even though, like, it's not as testable as someone who claims that a God exists, it's actually pretty interesting that you
Wait a minute. I take exception to the last statement.
It's not as testable as
the one where someone claims a God exists. There are no testable claims.
It's just as testable as people who claim that there is one.
All right. Yeah, well, you said it wasn't test, and I thought, Anyway, go ahead.
Oh, did I say it wasn't? I'm sorry. Yeah. I'm saying both of them are on the same standard of testability, that you can't really test either of them.
Oh, okay.
But one is falsifiable. One is falsifiable. Like, you can say, like, if someone says, hey, God exists, it's like, well, what would it look like if you're wrong? It's very hard for them to come up with a false viability claim for them to understand what it would look like if there's no God, because they look at the trees and see a God.
Mm-hmm.
They look at deep space and they see a God. They look in the back and see a God.
And every baby is a miracle. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're literally on the ocean of watches. I don't know if you heard that. But what I'd like to get into is testability, what it means, and why it's valuable as an aspect for an argument. Then maybe in the second half we can cover falsifiability, and then quickly in like a couple of sentences combine those two and find out why they're both really important things to have as part of an argument.
Go for it.
Cool. Well, let's talk about testability. What does testability mean to you, and why do you think it's important?
I put an example on one of my articles called Let's Have Some Testable Change Claims for a Change. And the first test that I had was, you know, you come across a caveman, you know, like it happens every day, and you show him a lighter, a Zippo lighter. He says, what does it do? And you say, it produces fire. He says, bull. No, it doesn't. And you say, yes. And you click, and there it is. And he says, well, I'll be damned. That's the falsifiable claim. If, you know, you make a claim of what it does, and he exhibits skepticism, you show him that it does in fact do what it is. In other words, you prove the claim or give evidence to the fact that it does create fire, and then he is convinced. That's a falsifiable claim. Now, if it didn't, or
but I want to know about testable claims. Tell me about testable.
That's
claims
a testable first. Claim.
What
is it not?
What is this test that you're doing? Explain this to me.
The test is producing fire.
How do you get it? Why do tests at all? Like I don't understand. Why can't we just say, hey, you know, make fire and then you're good to go. That's it. Like, why do you have to even do that test in the first place? None of that makes any sense.
That's why I used a caveman, because he's not used to seeing something that would produce fire at the flick of a finger.
Hey, well, this is why no caveman ever calls into the show.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, why? So, like,
they're too busy selling insurance is what it is.
I know, right? What I care about is a reliable way to get to a conclusion, right?
Uh-huh.
So, like, I don't care. Like, there might be things that are true that I can't test to see if they're true. Like, that might be the case. But I don't want to guess and be right about something. I want to have a reliable way to get there.
Right.
And so I'm looking for qualities that are desirable in the methodology that I use to arrive at my conclusions. And things that I can test, like a method that I can test, it's a hell of a lot more reliable than a method that I can't test. And that's why I like testable methods. Like that, you know, that Bic lighter thing that you brought up. Like, that's something that we can test repeatedly. He could do it. I could do it.
Mm-hmm.
You could do it. We could do it independently.
Right.
We could do it as a group.
Mm-hmm. Right.
These are, like, things that make us more confident that the method that we're using is deriving or getting us to a true conclusion.
Yep.
When we can't test. Oh, go for it.
No, I just said yep.
Well, I'm saying when we can't test the method, like when we have a method that we can't test. For example, say I have a lighter, but it's, you know, it fell to the bottom of a mine, and none of us can reach it. So the question is, does that lighter still work anymore? Like, does that specific lighter that's dropped down this mine still work?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I don't know if there's a method that I can use to determine that, because normally what we do is just turn it on and see if it works. But we can't test that lighter anymore. No one can reach it anymore.
Right.
So can we arrive at a conclusion that we're really confident about anymore? And probably
right.
the answer
we
to
can.
That is no.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd be better off saying we don't know about the functionality of that lighter.
Well, that would be the most honest answer.
It would be. Not only that, but it's actually the best answer when you don't have enough conclusive evidence.
Right.
And if you don't have a good method to lead you to that kind of conclusion, I don't know becomes not just a now, but one of the best, most optimal, and truest answers that you can actually give.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And there's nothing wrong. And it's actually a statement that meets its own burden of proof, because we can all demonstrate that we don't
right.
know.
And there's nothing shameful about saying you don't know. If you,
no.
in fact, you don't know. Ignorance is a temporary state, generally.
Exactly. It's temporary, and it's also just a great way to start learning about something with as little bias as possible.
Uh-huh.
So, hey, I like testing methods. What's good ways to test the method? If we can't, you know, we have observational evidence, like,
mm-hmm.
for example, that lighter. Is there any other kind of evidence that we could use to test something?
You're talking about testing something or testing a method. They're two different things.
Testing a method as my something.
Okay. All right. Well, a method, of course, is the way you get to a conclusion. In other words, the procedure that you use to either prove or disprove a claim. And to test the method, you would have to have several methods and a conjecture and a conclusion that is foregone. And then you could test the different claims to see if they different methods to see if they arrive at the proper conclusion.
Is there, like, other kinds of tests aside from observational tests that are useful that you can think of off the top of your head?
Observational meaning just personal, or you got
machinery? Observational, as in I can see it, I can weigh it, uh-huh. I can taste it, I can smell it.
Well, yeah, we've got all kinds of machines that can do that for you. You can see into visual spectrums that we can't see. We can test for audio frequencies that we can't hear, et cetera.
Yeah.
Even Geiger counters
I think
test for things that we wouldn't be able to tell, you know, from our own feelings, our own skin.
Yes. Now we're getting into something. So this is like spectroscopic or spectrometric kind of testing where it's technology that goes beyond the limits of our simple observational skills that we have,
right.
that's given to us through biology.
Mm-hmm.
It allows us to detect things like in far depth reaches of space.
Right.
So pretty good reliability. I like mathematics a lot.
Sure.
It tends to be the basis of like all forms of science because it's just a way of expressing like concepts.
Uh-huh.
But like in math, we have this idea where we just declare truth to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
So like two, like the value two, just like the number two, may not necessarily exist in a perfect sense because there's nothing that's exactly two of something. But in math, we could just say, hey, there's two apples. Like, it doesn't matter that one apple weighs a little bit more than the other in real life. In math, we can just declare it to be true. And we can use those declarative statements and say, this is true because I'm saying so it's true. It's truth by axiom.
Right.
And I can add numbers together. I can get some really good, you know, statistics out of, like, how many apples grow in this orchard. And we can actually verify that with, like, statistics, with algebra, with calculus, and, like, get, like, a really good economy based on, like, these numbers. That's really, really helpful at generating a model of, like, how to grow apples and sell them and distribute them.
Right.
Even though the number itself doesn't really reflect the truth of the matter, but it's very, very close to the truth of the matter. And that's all we need, like a reliable model.
Yeah.
So like, mm-hmm. as far as like a method goes, I like things that make reliable methods or reliable models about reality
mm-hmm.
that are useful, that allow us to make really good predictions of the actual reality
right.
that we all experience.
Uh-huh.
Like, these are reliable by virtue of the fact that they're incredibly useful and are actually have predictive powers that are useful. This sounds kind of similar to like how like holy books are, though.
You
right?
mean that you can
like,
actually be a prophet with mathematics?
Yeah, you can make some pretty awesome prophecies.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between like a guy who has a holy book that says like a God, his God exists, it's really useful for him, and it can be used to make prophecies as well? Like, what's the difference there between like a math book that's making like, you know, reliable, you know, declarations versus is Holy Ghost. Can you think of the difference between the two?
Well, generally, the ones that use the Holy Book don't do so with precision. They just say, you know, this country will go to war with another country, and the king shall fall, you know, and the horse shall lose a nail and all this in his hoof. You know, it doesn't say when or where or what country or any of that stuff. And all of the times that each and every time that the Bible or a Bible scholar has used the Bible to predict the end of the world, guess what? It didn't work. It didn't happen.
Well.
We're
you know,
all grateful
up,
for that.
It's coming up pretty soon. We got one in 2 hours. We let's pray some for those. Let's keep it next to the end of the show.
We'll yawn.
I will say this, though. The difference that I see between, like, a math book where I can actually work out those problems myself and see if I come up with the same answer that you would or anyone else would versus this Holy Book that's, like, steeped in mystery that requires like interpretation of different people who get it different each time, you know, like different people have different dates when the world can end. People have different dates for, you know, who walked where, who spoke to who, how old people were at certain times. Because there, the Holy Book has things that are supernatural in nature, and supernatural things are really hard to test because we don't really have supernatural detectors. We don't have supernatural measuring sticks, for example.
Yeah.
So, like, the claims that are made that are supernatural in origin tend to be really difficult to test. And because we don't have a reliable method to test the supernatural, and because there are things that are explicitly stated in Holy Books not that are beyond testing or that we're explicitly told not to test, it makes it really hard to say that they're testable by nature.
Yeah.
In fact, it makes it straight out impossible. Which affects the reliability of those methods as far as getting to a true statement. They might still be true, but the method that you use to get to that truth is very unreliable, and that's the distinction.
No, that's so true. I mean, how can you test something when you don't know anything about it, and you don't have any attributes that you can build a machine or an experiment for to test that attribute? You know, they say it's omniscient. Well, how do you test for omniscience when you don't have an entity in front of you that you can interact with to test that omniscience?
I think most people are aware of the story in the New Testament where Jesus is walking alone, and he's taking a partial meditation away from his apostles, and he's approached by the devil who says, like, listen, I can make bread, I can make water, I can do all these things. What about your God? Let's see if we can test him. Like, let's see if that's true.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus tells him, you know, God does not like being tested, and do not test God. Period.
Oh,
I'm like, this would have been useful. Like, if we had a God that we could test, if we had a God that we could demonstrate existed, how many problems would we solve? And here's the weirdest part. Like, the devil knows that God exists. Okay.
It's if not anybody does, if he exists, then if anybody knows, he would. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. He still chose to disobey God's word, or at least according to the Holy Ghost.
And how could go ahead.
Therefore, knowing that God exists is not a guaranteed brainwashing or breaking of your free will. You can still choose on your own regard to follow the God or not.
Mm-hmm.
So then why does Satan get the opportunity to be tested or have like the knowledge that a God exists, demonstrated knowledge based on his own existence and experience that God exists? Yet we as people don't. It seems odd that a being that cares about us and wants to know about us.
Yeah, it can be argued.
It
can be argued, you know, that he's not human, therefore the rules that God made for humans didn't apply to him. But you've got other people who God used to show himself to all the time or show his miracles to, you know, a column of fire at night and a column of smoke in the day and a rain of frog and fire from the sky. And he actually appeared to a couple people as a burning bush and whatever else. But he never does that anymore. Never does that anymore. I wonder why.
Well, you know, it would be on YouTube, and then at that point, he'd be breaking his own rules. He would be like, hey.
Yeah, but it would still show that we could still know that he exists, but disobey him or not be one of his followers. And personally, I don't agree with the concept of worship anyway. I mean, why would you worship any entity? You could revere it. You could like it. You could think it's important or be afraid of it. But why would you worship something or somebody? I just don't get that.
Why would anything want to be worshipped? Yeah. That's probably another layer on top of it all.
Especially worshipping something that's as evil or as terrible as the God of the Bible, who more than anything else kills people and gives them plagues and sends them to war to kill each other. You know, a lot of believers ask me, you know, what I would do when I die and I'm face to face with God. Well, the first thing I'd do is ask him to explain all of the atrocities that are in the Bible. You know, tell me why he did it and beg my forgiveness. That's not to mention nowadays why children are getting cancer and being abused and raped by priests in his name. You know, how can he allow that to continue? Anyway, he's got a lot of explaining to do, Lucy.
a lot of explaining the Judaic God. But what about other gods? Let's take, like, for example, the pagan ideology and say, okay, so there's a tree that's outside. That's the god that they worship. We can test that it exists. You know, it's not a reliable... Now that we can test that... Now we have something that we can test, like the sun or a tree. Does that make their conclusion any more true? What do you think about that?
That the tree has a spirit that communes with us?
That the tree itself... Yeah, well, yeah. That the tree has a soul or a spirit, or that is, in fact, a god, if it is worshipped as a god.
Yeah. Well, that would still have to be demonstrated, because there are lots of trees and lots of plants. Is every little weed a god? You know, that type of thing. And if so, if they don't do anything, what's the difference between being a god and being a non-god if they don't manifest
at all? There you go.
That's
a good question to ask.
Yeah.
What's the difference between the two? That's a good one. It does draw back into the concept of necessary and sufficient. You know?
Yeah.
The concept there is it necessary to call this the word that we're using it? Does it add, because without that word, does anything or any attribute get taken away from the thing? Or is that word just a label? Inherently, most things, especially with the words that we use to describe things, tend to just be labels. The thing is, we have useful labels for things that is a shared agreement between the two of us of what a word actually means or what an object is called. So, like, if I look at a soda can and call it a soda can, like, we agree that, you know, if I say soda can, you'll think of a soda can. That's functionally useful. I could call it an elephant. But is it necessary for me to call it an elephant? Is it, by me calling the soda can an elephant, change the dynamics of the soda can at all?
No.
By me pointing at a tree and calling it a god or a spirit, does that change it at all? And if not, then maybe we're not really adding anything to it aside from an unnecessary...
Or muddying the definition of words, too. We're taking away the power of language.
Right. But it does bring up this interesting thing, because I could call a tree a spirit, or I could say a tree has a spirit. But then again, how do I still demonstrate that to be true? And is that method testable? Like, is that method that we use, is the method that we're using to say that a tree has a spirit reliable?
Uh-huh.
That's what I'd like to know. And if it's being tested, that's a good way to figure that out.
Well,
and I think anyone who's listening to that could maybe devise a way to determine.
Well, I can tell you how they would tell you.
Open to know about it.
I can tell you how they would tell you that they could test it, you know, if you... say you strip the bark, you know, away from the bottom of the tree all the way around, and in a couple of years it died, you'd say, well, I robbed the tree of its spirit. You know, just the same thing as they'd say, you know, a spirit departs humans when they die, that type of thing. But it's still just a claim and an untestable claim, because when a Bic lighter runs out of fluid, it dies. Does the spirit depart? You know, when your car runs out of gas, you know, when you have any mechanical system that stops working for whatever reason, the system itself breaks, does a spirit depart from it? You know, my take is that there are mechanical systems that work, and there are some that don't. The mechanical system of a tree works because of chemistry. The mechanical system of a car works because of the engineering craftsmanship that went into it. Now, the system can break. Things can go wrong, and it stops working. But that's pretty much all that happens when we die, plants die, or anything else that's living dies.
That's how about this, then?
Personal take.
If there was a pagan that had a very naturalistic or very natural, well-grounded definition of what a spirit was, like something that we could test, something that was like, you know, was like biochemistry for a tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're basically, it's a tautology. You're saying if they have a testable system, could we test it? And the answer is yes, of course. But how would we devise that?
Yeah, but my point was not so much the tautology of it, but like, even if they were to come up with a naturalistic concept of what a spirit was in natural terms and just borrow terms from biochemistry and say that's what it is, it still doesn't meet the criteria for necessary and sufficient, because we already have the words in biochemistry without the word spirit added on top of it.
Right.
We can still express what this is without having to use the word spirit. And at that case, spirit just becomes a label that's really unnecessary.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Even though it's desired by some people,
huh?
It doesn't add anything that's sufficient, doesn't add anything that's necessary, and therefore it's just basically an extra word that can be cut out. It's not a problem. It's a name tag that just fell onto a much more important thing that, you know, can be easily removed.
Right.
That's the key point. I think we still run into an issue where it's like, when we test this method, or when we test the way that you're getting to here, it sounds like we're just using the test that we have for biochemistry. It sounds like we have to test just engineering and car parts. Where's the spirit? Like, how can we still get to the conclusion that spirit exists?
Mm-hmm.
I think I would challenge anyone who believes in, like, you know, inanimate objects or animate objects or organic objects having spirits to find a good, reliable way to determine if that's true. And the best way to do that, or at least a good aspect to the method of doing that, is having something that's testable. Something that I could test, something that Larry could test, something that would be undeniable if we all try to figure this out together.
Yeah. Peer review, basically.
Only because that would be more reliable than a test that couldn't be.
Right. Well, 1,000 tests on the same thing are better than one or two tests on it. And that's why sample size is important.
Let me ask one quick question before we break.
Sure.
Are tests always right? For example, there was a lot of people who may have done tests to see if Earth was the center of the universe way back when, like before Galileo's time, but they were all wrong. So, like, what's the value of testing? Like, or like FDA, you know, sometimes they recall drugs. Isn't that a failure of the method of testing, like, drugs or, like, doing drug clinical trials? Like, sometimes we get things wrong. What's the problem?
Yeah. Yeah, but multiple testing over time will get it right. You just have to keep going, and you have to build better and better tests to get to the point. That's where the method comes into the whole equation.
Okay. I'll just throw on top of that. When we get things wrong, we only know it by virtue of doing more tests. And as we evolve the way how we do tests and get better at it and get more information, we're able to call out things, and that's not a failure of the model that we've devised by testing. That's an accomplishment of the model of testing. But through testing, we're able to pick things that don't work and move them out of the system and keep the things that do work. And this is a constant progress that we're exercising.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, when we're wrong, that's not a failure of the system. That's the system succeeding. That's the system doing what it's supposed to do.
Right.
Picking out the duds and keeping the good things that exist.
Yeah.
That's why testing is valuable.
Yeah.
Because we can recognize the things that are wrong. Which will get us to falsifiability, which is what we're doing in the second half. Let's go.
Well, it brings a quote to mind that a reporter asked Edison when he was having such a hard time developing the light bulb. He couldn't get the filament right. It kept burning out. And he says, You've made 1,000 attempts at that thing. What makes you think you're going to get it right? He says, well, we know 1,000 things that don't work, and we're going to keep on going until we find the one that does. So this is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee, and we're going to play a song called Get Down on Your Knees, Dear Father, and I think it's self-explanatory. We'll be back in a minute.
What?
All dressed up like a Christmas tree, with velvet lace and gold. They took us to their sacred house, and we did what we were told. They filled up our heads with stories, and they told us that we could be saved if we sang and praised their hero. But he never showed his face. They warned us to watch out for Satan, who'd be waiting there to capture our soul. If we didn't heed all of their wishes, he would drag us all down through that hole. We'd burn and we'd scream there forever, and our cries, they would never be heard. Yes, the innocence of little children will accept the liar's word. Get down on your knees, dear Father, and beg now forgiveness for me. Show me that you're truly sorry for the person that I couldn't be. Show me some tears now of sorrow. Show me a face that is real. My innocent and lonely existence was never left there for you to steal. They take away all of your childhood. They'll rob you of all of your dreams. Their cruelty, it hurts and will leave you with scars that can never be seen. And we are all left here to suffer with the heartache of struggle and strife. And our tears, they'll never dry up. They follow us on through life. Get down on your knees, dear sister, and beg now forgiveness from me for the cruelty towards all those children and the pain that you'll never see. The mothers that lost all their babies and never would see them again. The cries from their beds still remain in their heads, and slowly it drives them insane. Your paintings, your gold, your chandeliers. Take all your sermons and all of your songs. You won't be back no more. Take your church and your holy shame, your evil deeds from where you came. Your candles that melted and no one cares. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show.
Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
And we're back. Welcome back to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Today's Wednesday, June 6th. That's about the halfway mark in the show. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And it's time to tell you a little bit about the free thought groups that are here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 16th year. ASK now has over 800 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org. Or you can go to meetup.com and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. And if you don't live in Knoxville, you can still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't have one? Start one.
Start one.
That's right. Also, you can join ASK in person at our weekly meetup, which happens every Tuesday evening at Black Horse Pub off of Kingston Pike in Bearden. where we get together for food, drink, and conversation. Everybody's welcome. That is, as long as you don't come to preach, proselytize, provoke, or punch. Thank you, Atheist Experience. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. They've been around for more than 20 years. RET has biweekly presentations and discussions on the Pellissippi State Campus near Hardin Valley Road. They meet the first and third Sunday, about church time, 10:30, at the Goins Administration Building, Cafeteria Annex. That's too much to remember. Just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events. There's also the Sunday Assembly, which started in England just a couple of years ago and has spread around the world. It's a no-God church setting for those who no longer believe in gods but still like the fellowship of a church-type gathering. They only meet once a month, however. That's the fourth Sunday of each month at the International Building down by the World's Fair Park. Then there's the Secular Student Alliance, which is kind of calling it a halt right now because school's out. They have programs for to give camaraderie and community to any free-thinking high school or college student who would like to be involved in the free thought movement or would just like to meet other free thinkers to hang with. Everybody needs like-minded friends, and atheists are no different. Now we get to the TV show we mentioned a little bit earlier in the show. That's the Free Thought Forum. You can see it every Wednesday night between 6:30 and 7:30 on Comcast Channel 12 or Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online. You got a phone, you can watch it. It's at ctvknox.org. You can find archives of their shows on YouTube, where a fan has been recording and posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words: Free Thought Forum Knoxville. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or this radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. You could be our next co-host or guest. And if you like Wozo Radio, be sure to tell your friends about it. And if you'd like to support Wozo, just go to WOZOradio.com and click on the support button. Now, we're back to our topic now. And where did we leave off there, Wombat?
We're at the two-hit punch: testability and falsifiability.
Right, right.
We are talking about two great aspects, methods that can lead you to conclusions that essentially just make the method really reliable and therefore the conclusion pretty reliable. We just talked about testability, and I think we left off on a really interesting point. Sometimes when we test things, we realize later on that the test that we, or the conclusion that we reached, were wrong, and we only get to that point because our testing lets us know that sometimes the things that we determine to be true are not true. And then we could see this in FDA testing for drugs. We can see this in, like, you know, thinking how we evolve our scientific understanding, learning that germs are actually a thing, learning that, hey, maybe you should wash your hands before we deliver babies.
Right.
Like, all these things were things that we thought the opposite was true, but through testing we realized mm-hmm. what the actual case of the matter.
Right.
And it's good to know that testing is capable of detecting the duds, because it's good to know when you're, or it's good to have a thing that can tell you when you're wrong, because then you can move the things that are wrong out of the equation. And
right.
Right.
And there was a quote that one of your interviewees, you talked to the rationalists this weekend, and you made you made a point to one of them that really stuck home. And you were saying, you know, if you don't have a reliable method to test something, if you can't get any evidence for that thing, why would you believe in that thing? And that stuck with your interviewee, and he went away with it after saying, a few times. He hadn't thought of that. Because, you know, all these religious claims, you know, the priests will tell you they're not testable. Well, if they're not testable, then you're not falsifiable. If they're not falsifiable, why would you believe them?
Right.
Right.
Right. So that is the essence of falsifiability.
Uh-huh.
It's not necessarily saying, hey, this test was wrong, or the test showed up and it was wrong. It's more of like a hypothetical case of, like, what would it look like if you were wrong? Are you able to recognize what it would look like if you were wrong? Because if you're not able to recognize what you look like when you're wrong, then how would you ever know if you were wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And there's the distinction there. That's the scary part.
Yeah.
Like, if for everything that I believe to be true, for everything that I'm convinced to an extent is true, and I'm never absolutely on anything, but for the most things that I'm pretty confident are true, I know what the opposite would look like, so that I would know, oh, maybe I was wrong. Or, and not saying that that's the case now, like, for example, we can even say, like, hey, I know my mom loves me, But in the case that she doesn't, I would be able to recognize what that would look like.
Right.
You'd probably pick me out. But yeah. I'd be able to recognize what it would look like, where I'd be like, okay, mom doesn't like
you. Who are you?
Get
out of my house.
But I have a model in my mind of what it would look like for a mom to love someone.
Right.
And my mom's fulfilling that model very well. So, like, I'm at least confident with that to be. So the question doesn't become, is it 100% if something's falsifiable, then you're saying that it's not true. You're saying, are you capable of recognizing what it looks like when it's not true? And that's what's important, because if you're not capable of recognizing that, how would you ever know if you're wrong? And a lot can be said for, you know, theistic claims, whether or not they're falsifiable.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about that?
Well, let's take one in particular. You know, prayer works. You know, that is, they say that it's testable. It's falsifiable because, you know, if you pray for stuff. I prayed for my aunt and she got better. You know, I prayed for my uncle to go back in on Alcoholics Anonymous and he did. You know, that's the proof is in the pudding. Of course, they don't realize.
When they don't get better.
Yeah. They're using confirmation bias. They're not counting the misses. They're only counting the hits. And even the hits, you know, they don't count it when their aunt gets worse or their uncle falls off the wagon again. They don't count that
as a
non-answered prayer.
Well, in most cases, sometimes they do. But what they'll tell you is like, oh, well, it was God's plan that my wife didn't.
Yeah, God wins it either way. You know, he can do no wrong.
Yeah, exactly. God has it either way. And that's how you know it's not falsifiable. Because if the question is, God is answering my prayers, but when he doesn't answer your prayers, it's just God moving in mysterious ways to answer your prayers. That's an unfalsifiable position that you put yourself in. You put yourself in, or the people who have that are using a method that is not reliable by virtue of the fact that it can't be falsified. There's no state in which they recognize that the God wasn't doing what they had wanted them to do. Because whether that helped them or didn't help them, they still believe in the God. It's inherently a useless method to get to a true conclusion. Doesn't necessarily mean the conclusion's false, but I mean that God could still exist.
Yeah.
But the question is whether or not the method that they're using is reliable. And in this case, it's not, if it's not falsifiable.
Right.
It would be better if it was.
Right. But even then, you've got to have a method to test it. It has to be something that you can use the method on. And supernatural claims are notoriously without handles. You can't grab a handle on a supernatural thing.
Right. I got a more, slightly more extreme example. There's a really good video series on YouTube, and I am kicking myself in the butt for not being able to figure out what the name of this was off the top of my head. But he does like these flash cartoons of like, of apologetics just animated out in a really funny way, because he doesn't really contort the idea too much aside from just what it is. So, like, one of the examples is, like, there's a drive-by shooting, and I know that's a terrible thing, but the case is the bullets miss a man miraculously. And the man's like, yep, this is proof that my God exists, because I believed in God, and all these bullets that were aimed at me didn't hit me, therefore I was able to survive. And that's proof from that a God exists. Then, in a separate scenario, in, like, an alternate universe, he gets hit by one bullet. And he has to go through rehab, but he's like, well, I know my God exists because, you know, I was injured, but I was able to make it through, and that proves to me that my God exists no matter what. There's my proof. And then there's another alternate reality where he gets hit and killed, like he's dead.
Right.
But his family's like, well, you know, this is...
He's in a better place.
He's in a better place, and we believe in God, and no matter what,
they've worked out stories where God literally cannot lose.
But the thing is, the claim can never be falsified, regardless
right.
of whether he gets hit, whether he doesn't get hit, or whether he dies from like the first bullet. It's inherently a useless methodology, and a lot of people put a lot of effort into keeping these kinds of methods. And what's the issue is, like, we're not challenging the conclusion as skeptics by saying, you know, your method's not falsifiable. We're not saying that your God doesn't exist. We're saying that the method that you're using is really unreliable to put that much confidence.
Right.
Maybe you should get a better one. That's all we're asking for. Like, if you had a better method to get to the stop, we'd be willing to listen to
you. Yeah.
This one that's not falsifiable, not testable, That's a problem, mm-hmm. and it can't be really convincing to get me there.
You know, they give their religious claims such a free pass, though. They use logic and reason for pretty much every other area of their lives. But when it comes to religion, they just give it a pass. They just turn that off because, you know, they have to accept the claims of religion or they think they're going to end up in hell. You know, it's the fear, mm-hmm. fear-based religion.
Yeah.
And death-based.
Yeah. Yeah.
And a lot of them are.
Is there anything, I'm trying to think of the counter to what, can we falsify falsifiability? Like, is there anything that we can't falsify that could be true, is what I'm saying. I'm thinking, like, we're not saying absolutely all the time that something needs to be falsified.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends on if science can jump up to the test or not. I mean, we didn't know that gravity waves were real. Until we were smart enough and technologically advanced enough to be able to develop a device that would detect them. So, yes, there are things that are not falsifiable at this time that could be real. But the time to believe something is when it's demonstrated to be true. I mean, the person who decided to believe in gravity waves, you know, 50 years ago, would not have good basis for doing so. Now he would.
I have a slightly more convoluted things that I'm trying to, like, steam out a little bit, but, like, our logical absolutes that we have,
mm-hmm.
These things such as, like, the law of identity, like, saying this apple is this apple, or, like, that star, my car is my car, or mm-hmm. the letter A is the letter A. Like,
we're back to tautologies
like
again.
Yeah. But those are also absolutely true, right? As far as, like, a tautology is concerned. They're, mm-hmm. like, truth.
They're logical truths.
Right. Mm-hmm. They're out logically absolutely true. And the only issue is I can't falsify something like a law of identity because to express what I mean in talking about to try to falsify it, I am basically meeting their criteria for the law of identity in that effort. Like by me saying the law of identity is not true or I can falsify it by saying something else is not true, I'm still talking about the law of identity. I know
yeah, and you're using reason to do it.
I'll just say this.
Go ahead.
The logical absolutes are called absolutely true, at least in this context, by virtue of the fact that in order to try to prove them wrong, you have to use them and assume that they're true. And that's why they're really hard to falsify, but by virtue of the fact that you still use them, even when you try to falsify them, they're very reliably true. And it could be an example of something that we couldn't necessarily falsify, yet still be true. So it's not the case that something needs to be falsified for it to be true. There could definitely be things that are true that are not falsifiable. It's just that that list of things are very, very small. And it would be better to have something that we could falsify as a convincing argument
mm-hmm.
towards, you know, leading mm-hmm. us to a conclusion that's reliable than lacking it. Because things that lack it tend to be not true. There's a bigger pool of things that just aren't true that also can't be falsified than the other way around.
Right.
So we're looking for things that we can be testable and falsified.
I don't know. Yeah, we would definitely have that. The thing that gets me is that even if a religious claim were true, we couldn't believe it. I mean, we couldn't prove it by using religion. We would have to use reason, logic, and science to verify it. And
why those things? Why those things?
Well, because that's the language that we use to verify things between each other. It's part of a society. It's part of communication. We can just if I don't use reason or logic, then what would I use? You know, when I'm talking about something that I want to verify. And science would just be another tool that we could use to verify something that's extant in the world.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. Science, reason, and logic are all just tools or methods that we use to get to conclusions that tend to be reliable by virtue of the fact that reason, logic, and science are all testable, all testable things, and can also be falsified.
Right.
Like, those are really important aspects. Like, science where you can't do tests or falsify claims is useless science. Like, it literally cripples itself. Reason is the two foundations of reason are, like, testing and falsifiability. And the same can be said for logic, aside from the logical absolutes with regard to falsifiability. We can test, you know, and in fact, I can even test the falsifiability of logically, like I can logically say this is really hard to falsify, even though I make the effort to do so. And all of these things that you brought up utilize as a pillar testability and falsifiability,
right.
Which is why they're really useful and reliable to come to conclusions. Why it's better than religion, which is in certain aspects not testable or falsifiable.
Right. And if you have somebody that tells you something and then tells you you shouldn't use reason or logic to examine it, and it's, you know, he's not your friend. If they don't want you to think, they're not your friend. So, you know, I would stay away from a person like that. Even Martin Luther,
your friend. Yeah,
one of the most famous religious leaders in history, Martin Luther, called reason a whore and said that we should condemn it to the lowest closet in the house and not use it. Because we might find our way out of religion. We might find our way to losing our beliefs. So he said, you know, don't use religion. I mean, reason, sorry. Don't use reason. And that to me is just crazy. I mean, if anything other than a flat claim would need religion, logic, and maybe even science to verify it.
Yeah, the whole thing. So, man, I had three things just struck in my head as far as things we could talk about. I'll probably go with this one real quick.
Okay.
I do these things called street epistemology, which is just informal interviews that I have with people about, you know, the methods that they use to get to conclusions, and we see if we can work together to get either a better method or learn something from the method that they currently have if it's actually really good. I had one guy tell me that he believes in God, and we were talking about that for a while. You hadn't seen this interview. It was pretty bad. I didn't do a really good job of getting him from out of preaching mode. But I remember when I was asking my hypothetical question to see if I could, like, test the method that he was using to get to his conclusion.
Yeah.
And he said, well, I don't answer hypothetical questions with regard to my faith. Like, they don't matter.
To my what? With regard to my what?
To my faith.
Oh.
Like, if it's to my faith, I don't answer hypothetical questions. And so I could have phrased it in a more, you know, I could have phrased it in a non-hypothetical. But I was just really fascinated by the concept that he didn't want to answer, like, a certain kind of, like, question with regard to his faith. And I think, like, if anything's true, especially, like, something that you put your entire life, you know, center your entire life around, it's not going to be afraid of questioning.
Right.
Truth loves to be questioned,
right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Only lies try to avoid questions without, you know,
yeah,
with any kind of scrutiny. Mm-hmm.
And we'll
truth is like, dare me, I want to see what you got.
It's never afraid of investigation. And he will turn right around and to defend his faith by using anecdotes and parables, but he won't entertain us.
Oh, he sure did.
What do you call it? What was the word you used? The kind of story? No, you were saying he wouldn't accept those in his one where his faith is concerned.
Oh, he wouldn't answer hypotheticals.
Questions. Okay, won't use hypotheticals from you, but he'll use anecdotes and parables from his religion.
Right. So it was just a weird thing. I was just more fascinated by that than I was about continuing the conversation in an epistemological fashion. I would say this too. This is the other thing I just wanted to throw out. With regard to people who don't want to, I already said it. Truth loves to be investigated. Lies tend to not be.
Right.
And by virtue of the fact that we have good ways of testing, like things, like reason, logic, and science, these are things that truth likes to be, you know, investigated with. So mm-hmm. there shouldn't be any, like, concern if you're using those things to test it's something if you had a true belief.
Right.
What do you think of the concept of people? I've seen, like, some, you know, prominent atheists be challenged with the idea of we use reason to support reason. Like, for example, like, we say reason is a good way to test methods by virtue of reasonable, you know, investigation. Like, it seems like to a theist, that mm-hmm. we're using a circular reasoning ourselves.
Well.
Like, we're using reason to support reason. Like,
yeah, well, my answer is, what else would you use? Because, I mean, if you're using faith, you're just accepting what somebody tells you on faith, without evidence. Matter of fact, if you use faith, you are admitting that you don't have good reason or evidence to accept the claim. It's a simple admission, because if you had good evidence or reasoning to support a claim, you would use it. You wouldn't need faith.
Yeah. I also think of it as like a Venn diagram. And if I had like two circles that weren't overlapping,
yeah.
or maybe like one circle, everything inside the circle is reasonable. Everything outside the circle is unreasonable or not reasonable.
Uh-huh.
And so if I had to choose between how to, like, support claims, I'm going to use reasonable things to support it, even if it's reason itself, rather than unreasonable things. Because even unreasonable things can't support reasonable things by virtue of just what they are. Like, I can't use unreasonable logic to support reasonable actions.
Right.
But I could use reasonable things to support other reasonable things. I think it's an interesting thing. I think it probably requires a bit more fine-tuning with regards to how you would describe it. But, like, the aspect that I'm saying is, as you said, why use, or what else can you use? Because everything else tends to be unreasonable if you can't use reason.
Yeah, so, well, it's like a lot of times a Christian or a believer will come to me and say, you know, you just because you can't see God or, you know, you can't experience Him, you can't trust your senses. And my answer is, well, what else am I supposed to use? You know, this is what I have, my brain and my senses. And he says, I can't use them? Don't use reason, don't use your senses. You know, that is such a... I mean, if a salesman said something like that to you, you know, after giving you claim after claim on a used car, and then said, you can't search it, don't worry about it, don't go research this VIN number. You know, it's not testable.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't do it.
Oh,
you know, don't drive it either because, you know, we can't use driving. That's circular, driving it to see if it's good, you know. It's all stupid, but they just give it a free pass because it's been what they've been told all their life from their earliest childhood.
Yeah, there's a great skit on YouTube of a guy who tries to buy a car as if he was being indoctrinated in religion.
Oh, yeah.
Where it's just like, hey, we got a yellow car. It's really amazing. You're going to love it. Just give us the money. And I'm like, can I see the car? It's like, you can't see the car, but it's going to be amazing.
Uh-huh.
Just give us the money, and here's your key. It's like, wait, this isn't even a key. This is like a piece of paper that says four people saw my key 2,000 years ago. It's like, yeah, they're all reliable. Trust me.
Yeah. And then at the very end of it, does it say you have to die to get it?
Oh, yeah. Maybe. That would be a great way to put it. I forgot that. I have to grow it. But if it was the bottom line of the contract, like you only see the car after you die, that would be great.
Yeah. I love, there's a little meme of a kid looking askance at the camera, you know, very skeptical looking kid. And he says, let me get this straight. Somebody told you that being dead would be awesome and you believed it? You know, they don't give it two thoughts. But what
are
you gonna do?
I don't think we're trained to.
Right, we're trained not to.
Like I said, we're trained not to think about dying. We're trained not to think about these things. And if you do it long enough, it's debilitating to try to start, you know, fresh when you're in your 30s and you've never really considered that you could be wrong on this one thing that you focus your entire life around.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really cool thing when you think about it. But here's the baby steps. If you're listening to this and you believe something's true, see if you can flip it on its head and find out what it would look like if you're wrong. See if you can test or have a good way to test to see if your conclusion's true. And if you can say yes to both of those things, you're a lot better off than people who can't. And the chances are the thing that you're believing might actually be the case.
Yeah.
But if not, continue to test it. Don't ever say, hey, you're done and that's it.
Right.
And one
thing,
evaluate it.
And make sure that you demand good evidence when you do so. A good feeling is not good evidence. Feelings are not facts. So say, I feel great when I'm in church and they're playing music. That's Jesus moving in me. Well, maybe it's just you like the music, you know. Preachers practice taking you through an emotional roller coaster during church, and that's just part of it. So don't interpret it in a different way. So just remember, feelings aren't facts.
Right. And also, when you have your falsifiable method and your testing, present it to other people, because I think it's good to have other people weigh in on the methods that you use, especially true things.
Right.
And if they have, you know, comments or questions, be open to them and be open to refining your own methodologies as well.
Right.
That's how we all get better at this thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we've got about 30 seconds. Any real quick last words?
No. I'm enjoying vacation, and I want you guys to call your parents if you get a chance, if they're still around. Love to everybody, and I'm having a great vacation. Have a good time, guys. Also, thanks for RET for having me over and letting me talk to them. It was such a great time.
It was a good time. It was a great speech. Thanks for coming and doing that. It was really something. And
thank you.
And remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when we prove that souls are real and heaven and hell's are real. And as yet, they have not done that. So don't sweat it. And this is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Dotter 5 saying bye. Bye, Wombat.
Bye, Wombat.
We'll see you next week. Bye.
WOCOLP 103.9 FM, Knoxville, the People's Radio Station.